hi, Christine here. You didn't think we'd forgotten about you, did we? We have been hard at work at the next story for season 2 of Dread and Breakfast. And let me tell you, oh boy, it goes some places. Very unexpected. Very fun. But in the meantime, though we are close to releasing our next story, we also wanted to share a fun bonus interview with Mallory Swisher Kroll. I got to sit down with Mallory a little while ago and talk about her art and her work and her take on Spillman. It was really fun to catch up. Mallory and I know each other from college, and we love what she has done with Eloise and thought that you all might like to hear a little bit from her and about her. We did record this interview quite a while ago and have been sitting on it for a moment, so some of the things we talk about are a little dated, but stay tuned for the end. I will talk a little bit about some things that she's got going on now, so please enjoy! Well, welcome, Mallory. Thank you so much for joining us here on this little bonus episode of Dread and Breakfast.
Thank you for having me. I feel so important.
Like, you are very important, yes.
I just feel I'm going to be insufferable because I'm very excited.
Amazing. As a fellow insufferable human, you are welcome here.
I don't think that's true, but okay.
For those of you who may not know, although I don't know how you couldn't because we say it after every episode, but I am here with Mallory Swisher Kroll, and she is the voice of Eloise Blackburn, aka the witch, in season 2 for Dread and Breakfast. So we just thought it would be fun to have a little interview with her because outside of the voice of Eloise, we don't get to hear from you very much on our show. So welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. It's weird because I know you like from school,
yes.
But I haven't seen you in person in like 10 years almost until right now.
It's been so long.
Yeah. And I feel like because I listen to your podcast and I've had like interactions with Marissa and like the rest of you guys, I feel like I kind of know you. It's just like I've never had internet friends and now I have internet friends. And it's great. Aww, so
amazing.
It's exciting.
Yeah. Well, when we were building season 2 and brainstorming it and we were throwing around the idea of do we want to have a guest play Eloise, you were the first person that jumped to mind. Your witchy vibes precede you despite 10 years of distance.
That is the best compliment. Thank you so much. My unhinged demeanor. Thank you.
Amazing. And just like we have said it in various breakfasts, but like absolutely adore what you've done with Eloise. So excited that you're part of the show. For our listeners who might not know you, would you care to introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us about anything you'd like about yourself, your art, your podcast.
Yes. Wow. I was just like, what do I do? It was like that SpongeBob episode where it's like, just fine dining and breathing. Like, what do you know? I'm a working theater artist in Chicago. I'm one of the founding ensemble members of the Imposters Theater Company. We are a non-for-profit theater company, and we stage plays at like the crossroads of the fantastical and the mundane and the childlike and the adult. Like, we just like to explore weird, strange, I want to say magical. Sometimes it's magical, sometimes it's not, but like more outlandish themes.
Mm-hmm.
That just sort of question, all of our plays so far have been mainly for adults. However, it brings in like childhood imagination into the adult realm. So I really love that. We started in 2018, our first production was. And that was also a play that I wrote called The Wood. That was our premiere show of our company in 2018.
That's which is so exciting.
Terrifying, but it was great. And we were in this like little weird theater that was awesome. And now we, you know, however many years later, last month in April, my company just staged another of my plays. It took me that long to write and finish it, 5 or 6 years. But we did it, and it was staged last month, and it was awesome. It was called Beyond the Garden Gate. it was just amazing. There was an amazing cast and crew. A lot of the crew were people I'd worked with before, a lot of imposters, a lot of newer people. Mm-hmm. The cast was a lot of newer people, and it was so exciting. It was just, everyone was so good at their job.
Yeah.
And it was just amazing to watch, like, okay, this thing that's been in my head for so long. I mean, with The Wood, it was different. That was like a 2 to 3 year writing process, and mm-hmm. it was important to me, and I really loved it. But this play was just way more personal. So it was extra terrifying in a different way. I mean, everything you write is personal. You're a writer, you know, but like...
But some things are from a little deeper than others, for sure.
Yeah. And you could see, it was like, strangers wouldn't know, but anybody that like knows me, like, you know, or my family drama is like, oh, there's this. Like, I did not copy and paste anything. I didn't do anything like that.
No, but definitely the write what you know is a good place to draw from.
Yeah. It's like, let's put the trauma somewhere. Let's just put it up there. Just do it.
And this is a like, function of art. It's fine.
Yeah. And it's like fun. And then people will talk about it or whatever. But yeah. So that's mainly what I don't know. I've mainly been a writer, and I've mainly been a lighting designer as well for The Imposters. So I've designed, I don't know, like 7 of our shows, maybe. Probably more than that. 8.
That's incredible.
8 or 9. I lost track. Not all of them, but I've done a lot. And then we survived COVID, and that was great. And last year I was recently, I was voted the 2nd best lighting designer in Chicago by the Chicago Reader.
Hell yeah.
So that was pretty
cool.
Hell
yeah.
Yeah, but lately I've like stepped back from that just because I don't actually live in Chicago. I live in Indiana. So it's a long drive. And I
for
have
sure,
a
yeah.
daytime job where I like need to be awake. So it's hard to balance those late nights with that. What else? What was the other part of your question? Oh, my podcast. I'm also a part of a TTRPG podcast called Roll for Your Life. It's a Dungeons & Dragons real play podcast. It is my favorite thing ever.
It's so fun. It's so ridiculous. And I just love like the like bonds between your table as like just like deep friends, like all of you. And then like, obviously Mike, the DM, is your husband.
Yeah.
but like those bonds just like are so clear. And it's just like, you guys are having so much fun, and your characters are like, just really like Poppy is like, I just see so much of what I remember of like college Mallory, like distilled into Poppy in like the best way possible. Like I just, yeah. So it's a very, very fun listen.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I love Poppy so much. And she's been great. Through some shit in the recent episodes. So
yeah,
if you're a
oh
listener
gosh.
Of both, it's like really a lot. Yeah. It's just so fun. And I mean, it's cool that you can hear that, not just in like how we talk about ourselves, but in the gameplay. Like we've mm-hmm. been friends. I've been friends with Casey since we were like 11. So,
yeah.
And then, yeah, I was friends with Mike. We were like high school sweethearts. So Ow. We were friends before that. And like, I did not want to date anybody. And Mike and I were friends. And then I was like, oh, I think I like him. So that's cool. and it worked out. So I've been very fortunate in my friendships, like not just them, but, you know, people I met in college. I'm just very lucky in my friendships. And it's really fun. It's an excuse to, I wonder if you feel this way as well. Like, it's hard to be friends as an adult and like invest that time so that we have this time
yes.
scheduled is really great.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's also a piece of it too of like the one feeds the other, because in like collaborating with people, you have to really work on how much you trust each other. Mm-hmm. That's been a really big thing that I've noticed in working on Dread and Breakfast. It's a really, really special thing when you have a really deep relationship and connection with your collaborative partners as well.
Yeah. And I'm just so fortunate that Roll for Your Life is that. And it's like, you know, bi-weekly basically, and The Imposters mm-hmm. is also that for me. It's I have this shorthand with these people that we create things with, and they ask about stuff I'm working on, and Otherwise, I'd never get anything done. I would not, like, it's very fortunate that when I'm like, I have an idea for a play, that people keep asking me about it because then I have to finish it.
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so, like, that being able to keep accountable just by, like, the pure interest of, like, I know, like, Marissa and I, like, we've talked about our novels a lot. We talk about the podcast a lot. And, like, we keep each other accountable to keep writing because we're constantly asking each other questions about the things that we're working on. Or what's also great is when, like, you get stuck and somebody's able to, like, sprinkle an idea in to take it in a new direction that you wouldn't have come to yourself.
I mean, I am a firm believer that any art form informs other art forms if you're paying attention. Mm-hmm. Like, literally anything. I think photography can inform writing and vice versa. I think it just reprograms if you're willing to learn. Or, like, even non-art forms, I think, can inform your art. Or the other way around. Like, if you're an artist and you go to work and you do something that's not related to art at all, it can still help you in your job, or at least help the way you view the world. So yeah, I think they definitely do work together. I think Roll for Your Life has definitely made me a better writer, I think, because Mike is a really good storyteller. And he's got a math brain. I feel like you're maybe the same because you're an engineer, right? Like, you're a theater person, but
yes. I feel like I present like a math person, but in my brain, it's all just like color and soup. Like,
but like, I feel like because it maybe if this is wrong, like, stop me. But I feel like people with math brains are often very good at art, as you are, as Mike is, but they are going to, like, solve it before they get through it. Does that make sense? So Mike focuses on the plot.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So he will, when he starts a story, he's got the plot and maybe he doesn't necessarily have everything figured out, but he's got, like, okay, this thing, and then why would they do this? And then blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm just vibes. Like, I start with vibes. So he has helped me. He did help me with my play. I don't let him read my plays. And I try not to talk too much about it because I want him to be surprised. But there was one point where I'm just like, I don't know what could happen. I mean, I guess I can spoil it now because it happened. And, you know, wherever your listeners are, they're not going to see it right now. So I was like, okay, the sisters are trying to break their grandmother's curse. So how can they outsmart this fairy queen? Because they can't overpower her. So, like, what are, you know, some things they could do to trick her? And I was like, I don't know. I don't have a plan for that. They succeed somehow. And so I was able to talk that through with Mike vaguely enough because I know how his brain works. And that, like, okay, he'll say things and I'll be like, no, no, no. But I will get to the thing that I need to solve this problem.
I'm curious then, like, for, like, your collaborations with Imposters Theater, do you find that that uses a different side of your creativity and collaborative nature?
Yeah, it's definitely more organized and focused. Like, and, I'm more, like, if I have an assignment, I will do it, and I will show up, and I will be there, and I will do the thing. And if there's a problem, I'm sort of just like, okay, it's fine. It's live theater. Like, I stay calm and we could figure it out.
Yeah.
So, like, my colleagues have said, like, I just feel better when you're here. I'm like, I'm not really doing anything. They're like, yeah, but you're just calm. I'm like, I'm not calm in any other, like, aspect of my life. But that's cool. Like, if other people are freaking out, I'm fine. But if no one else is freaking out, then I'm freaking out.
There's, like, a quota that must be met, and once it's met, you're good, but until then...
Yeah. At least one person must be panicking, and if it's not me, I'm fine. I got it.
Someone's got it covered. We don't need to do that today.
Yep, nope. Yeah, I'm definitely more focused energy, and normally there's, like, I don't have, like, a title in our company. I'm part of our literary committee. Mm-hmm. I'm sometimes a designer, but I'm just there to support in ways that I can. So I like having direction. There's our leaders, our artistic director, Stefan Rosin, and our executive director, Rachel Borgo, are amazing, and they'll delegate, and our other, like, people will delegate, and it's great. And I like that because I was a good student and I like having an assignment that I do and I do it well and I help, and that's great.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Roll for Your Life, I have like the least to do of anybody. I just show up and bring a voice and vibes. Like, I love it. Because Mike comes up with a story. Mike and Johnny both edit. Casey runs our TikTok and we'll do our like merch and stuff. And I just show up and I love it. Not just for that reason, but I really loved improv in college. You know, I was part of those like college improv groups that are sometimes great and sometimes just not right. But I enjoyed it. And I didn't really have an opportunity for that. I had taken a class at like Improv Olympic with a friend after we graduated, and I just couldn't afford to keep doing that because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But I loved it. And so this is a really good outlet for that for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and especially because like actual play can be like long form improv. And when you're coming back to the table with the same people over and over again, that's basically like, you know, people have their improv troupes and they have practice before their shows and that sort of thing. And it's all about like building those connections and bonds with your co-performers.
Yeah. And it's also really cool because I don't think you would get this in improv, even in long form with like a, you know, an ensemble that you constantly work with. But our, like our character can change because I've been playing her for 2 years now. So you have a wider character arc than just an hour of a show or, you know, a 10 minute like Harold sequence or something like that. It's, I think a unique experience is really, it's really fun. I love it. Like, I just love D&D. And
yeah,
I didn't never played it like growing up. I never thought I would play it.
It was yeah, never. Me neither.
Yeah. Okay.
I was kind of taught that at a certain point in my life that like D&D was like part of like the whole satanic panic. Like,
oh,
that was not ever something that I thought would be in my life. And yet here we are.
Yeah,
I'm literally making a horror show, so.
Yes. Which, so, is it satanic? I don't know. I'm kidding. I'm joking. I love horror. I love the horror aspects of your show. Like, it reminds me, like, I know this isn't horror, but Dread reminds me a lot of Series of Unfortunate Events. Like, you've got these characters Ooh. In these, like, towns that are realistic, but also kind of wacky. Or like, you know, scenarios where people are realistic but wacky and like shit's yes. happening and the only people making sense are like the characters that you're following. Like everyone else is sort of like, yeah, but whatever. And it's like, no. I love it.
I love so as we're recording this, we have just wrapped recording our graveyard shift story.
Amazing.
Which I but that's really funny that you say that because I think we've definitely stepped even further into the wacky with
yes
graveyard shift and also I think a little further into horror as well, so I'm actually very excited for you to hear it.
Good. I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, so I'm very excited. I feel like nice. each one you guys push a little more spooky and there were like a little bit more, and I just love horror. My play that I wrote was accidentally a horror play. I did not think it was. I was just like, yeah. And then I saw it, I was like, oh, this is fucked up. Like, this is horror.
Let's talk. I want to talk a little more about your play. So Beyond the Garden Gate, you mentioned it earlier, that it was produced in April of 2024 through Imposters. Mm-hmm. So just real quickly, it's a story about fairy tales that are passed down through the generations of a family until they're eventually faced head on in very visceral ways. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's two sisters who are a bit estranged. They're not close, but their grandma, like, they are brought together at their grandmother's house, and their grandma raised them on fairy tales, mainly her own. And now the sisters are older, like college age in high school, and they realize something's wrong with grandma, like she's not well. And so the one sister is more practical, the younger sister Kat, she thinks it's dementia and like all this stuff, and it seems like it could be. But Maeve, the older sister, is a bit more flighty, a bit more like just out there. She knows that it is a curse. And she's always believed the stories from their grandma, and Kat has always been frightened of them. And so then Maeve has to convince Kat to go with her into the fairy realm to try to find a cure for Grandma's curse. And so they're faced with all of these creatures from their stories and creatures they didn't know about. And they have to face the Morrigan, who is a fairy queen. She's also from Celtic mythology. I did a lot of research and history delving for this play that I made up. So everything made up. But there's so much lore in it. It was to a point where I was just digging and digging and I wasn't writing because I was just finding more things. And I'm like, I have to stop.
I identify so deeply with that.
Yeah, there's so many books on, and I learned like throughout the process, like the Morrigan was a Celtic goddess who's also based on like where the fairy queen myth comes from. That's based on this goddess, essentially. In my research, which is very limited, I'm not a folklorist. I wish I was, but just gonna put that disclaimer out there. So if someone has different information, you're probably right. Please tell me. So I did a lot of research on that and I forgot where I was going with that. But I put a lot of fun references in there from like just like stories that I like that you don't have to know. Tamlin is a story about it's the first fairy queen ballad. It's from like, you know, medieval England. I put like references to that in there. I'm rambling now, but
no, because I was gonna ask you like about your inspirations going into the play and like like the research process and kind of what that was like to bring this idea. You mentioned that it had taken you 5 or 6 years to write it, and so just like if you wanted to talk about that process, and then bringing it to see like this very personal thing come to life, like what was that like for you?
Yeah. So I will say it's not 5 or 6 years of writing every day. I just don't write every day.
Sure. Yes. But, yeah.
You know, because some people will be like, wow. But I started writing it in 2018, like as soon, or 2019, like as soon as my other play ended, I'm like, okay. And it took me, I wrote about half of it kind of just right away, not in one sitting, but I came back to it and it was pretty fairly easy. And then I was stuck and I didn't touch it for a long time. And then COVID happened and I had a lot of mental health issues like a lot of people. So I had to just like deal with that and just get better and not have to like, I can't write when I'm sad, or I know a lot of people, it can be an outlet and that's great and it's helpful. But for me, I just can't. I just need to like just be cozy and drink tea and just sit with my cat and like not do stuff. So then when I eventually came back to it, it was a relief to know that my imposter's friends were still interested, in it. They had known about it beforehand and they were still asking in a very kind but an encouraging way, like, what's up with this? How can we help you? So that was really great. I think in pictures, so the first like idea I got for it is like a photograph in my brain, and it was just kind of the first scene of this, of Maeve like sitting at the table in her grandma's like clean kitchen, just like dirty shoes, asleep at the table, like had fallen asleep drawing. And then her sister comes in and is like, whoa, why are you here? So that image was just sort of really clear. And then I started writing that scene. And then the story, like, I didn't really have an idea for an exact story arc. I was just sort of like, okay, these sisters are here, they're at their grandma's house, I know that. And I like fairy stories, so that's going to be part of it. And then it turned into this, like, a bunch of research. I got a bunch of books on the Morrigan, which I found in my witch magazine that I get. It's called... I found it by accident. I found it by accident. I subscribed to this magazine called Enchanted Living. And it's got just, like, fun stuff in it. And there's, like, books that you can buy that are recommended, and usually I ignore them, but I was looking at one and it was like the Morrigan, something of the dark goddess. I was like, well, I have to get that. And a lot of it was like very informative. It read like a textbook, and the other part was like spells, because she is very much a deity that people like can contact and try to. Oh, wow. I do not do that. I respect that. I'm not trying to talk to anyone, but I love learning about her. Like, I believe you. That's great. I will not be speaking to anybody. But so she's like, she has like active followers, or I don't think followers is the correct term, but like people that try to commune with her spiritually. Yeah, my family's Irish. I've always been really interested in Irish folklore, and I've got a cousin over there that would bring stories back and like bring friends back, and they would be telling stories. So I've just always been very interested in it. So I've got like Irish folklore stories, and again, I'm not an expert. I'm not a folklorist, but I'm definitely like step above amateur, but not like I've had no schooling except by myself. But that's the type of content I consume, is like I listen to your podcast, and then I pretty much just listen to like interviews and folklore stuff and cryptid stuff.
That's so cool, though. Like, I feel like we are like with season two are very interested in the idea of like how stories are passed down and then also like interpreted and reinterpreted, and how like that can sometimes change the original meaning but also give it more depth for the people who are then encountering those stories. So that's I'm delighted to hear of this like real life occurrence, because it's something that like happens. Like, we think about folklore being this thing that, you know, in the past people told these stories and that's how we have the history that we have today. That's like well documented. But in reality, like, we are always telling each other stories and hearing and mishearing and reinterpreting and misinterpreting. And so like how does that look if you could track through time? What would that look like? So, yeah, no, that's really, really cool.
Yeah, I'm just fascinated by that. And the more I learn, like, it's like, oh, why do we knock on wood? It's because people did this to like appease the fairies that lived in the tree, to like not bother them. It's like all of these things that are a part of our everyday life have these, you know, roots from so far away. And they're definitely important in stories because my cat is attacking the door. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're good.
I thought I was going to die. Yeah, it's just so important to, like, we need to tell stories as humans, and people think it's frivolous, and a lot of people do it for fun, which is fine, and it is fun, but, like, it's something we need to survive. People have been telling stories since we could speak, since people wrote on cave walls, like, people were making art, so it's part of who we are, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, just storytelling, the importance of storytelling was also prevalent in my other play, The Wood, and the girl, it was another like fairy story where the two people were transported kind of Slenderman style into this wood and had like no memory, and the things inside were hunting them, and the girl had a suitcase of stories, but they were like living creatures, so she would pull out her stories and show them. So it wasn't a telling, it was sort of like a dance piece, and
yeah,
like she was using those to survive the horrible situation she was in, but also trying to convey like part of who she is to the guy she was with. And yeah,
that's such a beautiful metaphor. That's so beautiful.
Thank you. I just always come back. Stories are very important to me, and I see the importance of it to like just humans. So I always come back to it. It's always been a major theme in the things that I make.
You had mentioned that with Beyond the Garden Gate that it accidentally became a horror story.
Yeah.
I guess what elements, like upon seeing them produced, like what was that moment like when you realized, oh, this is horror? And like, how did you process that, you know, seeing it produced and having that realization about your own work?
So the first time I saw it, and I knew like things in it were scary. I just gravitate towards that sort of thing. Like there was a scene where the Morgan like plucks out a fairy's eye and eats it, so I'm like, that's gross, that's great, I love it. Like, you know, she is just sort of displaying to her court and to other people there that like she's, you know, in charge and she's not gonna fuck around. So she's like,
yeah,
you bothered me, ha, let me eat your eye. So I know things like that were scary. There was some violence against pets later on, which everyone was mad at me about. It was offstage violence, but a pet. But I'm like, the pet has to die because you have to know that it's serious. Like,
Sometimes the beloved characters have to die.
Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. We have to understand the gravity here. So offstage violence, fine. But the moment in the rehearsal that I saw the week, and I didn't like attend a bunch of rehearsals. I didn't attend any until tech week, which was sort of the dress rehearsals and things before the show opens. There's like a very long scene where they're in the grandma's house. We're establishing the relationship. They're like, come with me, whatever. And then there's another scene where they're at a tree and the sisters are arguing like, I'm not going down in that hole. There's no way. And the other sister's like, just come with me and you'll see. Like, it's all real. And she's like, whatever. And then when they finally get in, there's a scene where they're in a between place before they get to where they're going. And their grandma talks about it beforehand that there's like a creature you have to interact with and trade something. Mm-hmm. In order to pass down the long road to get to where you're going. And I invented this creature called the Watcher. When I saw that scene, so you're like in a grandma's house for 30 minutes maybe, and then a tree.
Nice, cozy.
And then it's a little more like whatever, the sisters are arguing and you kind of don't, like if you're an audience member, you're not quite sure if it's real or not, like what she's actually saying. And then boom, you're in this like cave. And the way Stefan staged it was so creepy. He had the ensemble fairies like behind these rocks. Like, it's so silly when you describe it, but because it's so simple. But there was like cardboard cutouts of like rocks and they were swaying and there was mist. And then the Watcher turns around and the actor playing her, playing the Watcher, was called Jasmine. And she was just so good. Her body language was so creepy. They put white contacts in her. And as soon as she turned around, and Stefan staged it where I had written it where the character speaks her sister's name, because like all of a sudden she's alone. She follows her sister in and now she's alone. And she's like, oh, no. And she says, Maeve. And then it echoes back is what I had written and amplifies. So Stefan staged it where the actors on the stage, you know, said,
oh,
Maeve,
wow.
Maeve, 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 Maeve. And it was just so gross. And then Jasmine turned around with her scary eyes. I was like, oh, fuck. I like screamed in the, like, thankfully it was a rehearsal. I was like, ah, that is just the image. Nothing violent was happening, but it was just so icky. I loved it.
Yeah.
And wow. Every night I attended that usually had a very audible audience reaction was just like, oh no. And then I did attend a lot of the performance and the audience reactions were amazing. There was just very vocal people, like quietly, but you know, I was listening for it. And there was one night where someone was sitting like two spaces down and every scene came and they were like, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck. It was just like increasing panic.
Oh man, I love theater. You could just get that immediate feedback.
Yeah. And at the end of the play, the older sister Maeve transforms. It's like part of the Morgans tricking them and is like, save your sister. And then she starts changing into all of these animals. And she's like, what do I do? And then her grandma's like, cut her out. And she's like, what?
Of the animal?
Of the animal. So
oh, wow.
Maeve is a giant wolf, but she is actually inside it. So at the end, the younger sister cat stabs the wolf. And we had a giant wolf head that was made by our designer, Jessica. It was amazing that she pried open and then bloody wow. Maeve crawled out. And people were like, oh, my God. It was just so good. And I don't mean to be like, I wrote this. It's so good. But just like to see just the way it was done. And it was just amazing. The actors, again, the team were incredible. And It was just so cool to see people reacting, and generally it was a positive reaction, or you know, an intense reaction.
And it really is such a satisfying and breathtaking thing to then also see the fingerprints of everyone who worked on it, like on this thing that then you get to hold up together. It's the spice of collaboration.
Yeah, it just makes it so much better than it would have been on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. And we feel that way about your interpretation of Eloise.
Oh, thank you.
100%.
Thank you.
I will never forget the very first story when we were doing Witch in the Woods, when you sent us the first set of lines. And what you sent back, like, brought her into this, like, playful space that I don't think any of us had initially imagined for her. And it was so perfect, and none of us could have come up with that on our own. But then also understanding, like, where you're coming from with Eloise has absolutely 100% informed how we have then written her in the various stories afterwards.
That's so cool.
That's been really, really wonderful, and we just love collaborating with you. I'm really curious to know, because I'm such a character person, I love building characters and voices and all that sort of thing. I just want to know, like, how did you craft your version of Eloise? What inspiration do you have? Are you pulling from any references, or is it just kind of something from the ether? How do you get into her?
Yeah. So in the lines and descriptions that I was sent in the beginning, I think it was Marissa had written, like, of what she was wearing of when you first see her, and
the gray dress. Yeah.
Yeah. What, with the bishop sleeves and whatever. And I think in pictures. So that just made sense to me, and I could see it.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, so this person dresses like this some of the time, you know, when they're not super spooky, or this is how they would look if they were, like, had a normal life. This is how they would choose to look. So mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, she's kind of stylish. There's something, you know, refined and, like, put together about her. And then I was just sort of thinking about trying to, you know, see the arc of where she was going. You know, you guys gave me information of, like, what happens later. And I don't know if I'm being particularly articulate, because I just get so much information and I don't get the story until I hear it later. So it's also just kind of confusing. Like,
yeah, it's hard, because it's like we can't just, like, send you the finished episodes,
because
then it would take us, like, a whole nother year to produce the show.
Right.
So yeah, we wrote up, like, this whole lore document. So you actually know, like, stuff that the listener doesn't know.
Cool. I wasn't sure, like, in the timeline where I was. So I was trying to also be very careful of what I was saying.
You're good. If you do, like, tread into spoiler zone, I will guide you back, or I'll just put a crow noise over whatever you say. That'll make sense once the next story comes out.
There were crows in my play.
There are crows. Yeah, I know.
Okay. This is great.
Were there crows in the ground? Because that organically happened in the story.
Oh, no, but I love that. The Morgan can turn into a crow.
Amazing.
Oh, back to your question. Sorry. So I thought about, like, what she was wearing and her descriptions. And then I thought, well, she doesn't talk to people, really. Like, you know, she's by herself wherever she is in her space. Mm-hmm. But she has to, you know, then go and speak to people on occasion in the town. And so how would someone, I just thought, like, how would someone sound that's trying to sound normal, but isn't? And is, I think also there's just, like, an underlying anger, not even directly shot to the people she's speaking with. Like, you know, the character, like Spencer and people like that in the first story, mm-hmm. who, like, she doesn't know them. They're not really related to this town, but it's all part of the town. She's just angry. And it's underneath, and she has to do what she has to do. But I mainly was just thinking, like, okay, how would someone sound if they're trying to sound, like, professional and personable, but hasn't really had a lot of experience with that recently? And also, so me. But, you know, who's also just, like, really pissed off. There wasn't any specific character I was modeling after. I just was like, okay, this is how she looks. How would she conduct herself? And kind of went off from there.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that you keyed in on, like, the anger aspect. It was definitely something that, like, developed and bloomed as we were going and planning out more. So, ooh, this is cool. There's so much exchange happening.
Yeah, I got that bit of her history that she was, like, unjustly murdered. So I was like, mm-hmm. well, if you're hanging around, I would be, that's just more time to be angry. I also yes, just really yeah. like scary stories where women like lose their shit. So because you just don't see it a lot, or at least in my life, which I'm thankful for, I don't see it in real life, but like I love to just see a woman lose her shit and like scream and just really lose it. It's yeah. satisfying.
Well, she definitely, yeah, definitely has those moments of of losing her shit and causing others to lose their shit as well. Yeah, yeah. Amazing. So I'm curious, like, if you have any theories or ideas about Spillman, or the story, or like things that you are like wanting to explore more.
I feel like I'm going to give a boring answer because I don't have like I'm not someone who, when I'm like fully immersed in a story, like I am when I listen to your podcast, I don't try to figure it out. And maybe it's also because I'm not a math person. Like, I'm a theater person. And I studied English also. I'm a words person. So I don't try to think ahead. And yeah. sometimes it happens organically, you know, depending on the story, what it is. If it's like a murder mystery, I am going to, you know, I'm going to try mm-hmm. to make guesses. But generally, I just want to be there for the story. I'm here for the ride. I'm the worst when I read something with like a questionable narrator because I'm like, I just believe them. They're the narrator. Like they're telling you this. And I'm like, okay, this is the world. Got it.
I'm the exact same way. Yeah.
Which I'm not like that in real life. So I don't understand. I question like everybody and everything, but I just buy into the story. So I don't really have like a big theory, but I am interested in like Eloise's connection to not just the town, but like nature, like the spider thing. Mm-hmm. That is just very interesting to me. I don't know if the crows play into it later, but
they might, who knows?
Like, I don't know if that's like a witch thing, if that's like an inherently like Spillman thing, or I'm just very invested in the spider bits.
Yes, I can say the spiders are incredibly important.
Yeah.
And there's more to come there for sure. So
great. Yeah. Not a theory, but just like, that's weird and I like it and I want to know more.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying about like just being so immersed in the story. I feel like playing Dread, especially in season one, like I was just there for the vibes in the story and like constantly was just completely caught off guard by stuff and would feel like so stupid as I'm listening back to myself playing that because I'd be like, well, obviously like XYZ is happening. But just in the moment, I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. What do you mean the DM can lie? Wait, what? What? Like...
And I mean, I feel like that also speaks to your like acting, then you are invested in it in the moment. You're not doing table talk like I do a lot in D&D sometimes. Mm-hmm. But we have been guilty of that a lot recently, especially me and Casey on Roll 4. We're like, basically anytime Rivik is doing something and we're like,
that I think is rightfully like that's justified, though. With Rivik in particular. But that's like the beauty of the actual play genre is that like you're telling this story, but you're also like immersed in this metagame. And like it's interesting to listen to people play this game and understand like their strategies and their questions and like how they're, you know, processing that information too. I'm curious, like, do you ever find yourself like coming up against like the need to play through like particular dramatic irony as you're like producing Roll for Your Life?
Yeah, and I feel like I have failed at that a lot because Poppy should be like way dumber than she is based on her history. And I am someone who's I think I'm like fairly smart, so I don't know if
you're
that's
very
like
smart, yes.
rude or like whatever to say, but like I'm normal smart, so like I you know, I see these situations and then I just think also I was learning how to play the game. I think mainly in the earlier episodes, I didn't do a very good job of that. Like Mallory was playing how Mallory would play, but Poppy shouldn't have known those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing the opposite. But recently I did have like a really big episode. I think it was 119 where like shit was going down and I like Mallory did want to do all of these things to like save somebody. And I was like, but she doesn't have that. Like, she doesn't have this thing and we're in water and this person's drowning. And like, it's like it wouldn't, you know, realistically, if you're waterlogged and you've got all of these instruments and things on you, like you can't be, you know, rifling through a bag and finding a tiny, like, also, like, if you can't swim, you're like, you're not gonna be able to do these things. So I did successfully do it recently, to someone's demise. But prior to that, I was like, no. So it's been a struggle, but I'm learning and I'm doing better and people are dying.
And a death has occurred. Hooray.
Yay.
Well, I think we're about wrapping up time-wise here. So I will give you a moment to spotlight anything that you'd like to spotlight. Tell us what you've got going on, if you want to promo anything or give anyone a shout out.
Just thank you again for having me. Thank you all. It's been like the best. I feel like a real voice actor and I get these like sides and everything, and you're all so organized and it's amazing. It's just been a great experience. So I love working with all of you. So thank you. Listen to my podcast, Roll for Your Life. The number 4, it's on all podcasting platforms. You can follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, whatever that is, on Roll4Pod. You can follow me on Instagram at Mel Swish. If you have questions for me, send them on Instagram, or jabs for me, send them on Instagram. just listen to my podcast and follow the Imposters Theater on Instagram as well. If you're in the Chicago area, come see a show if we've got one going on, but follow us on Instagram. We have one opening next week. When this airs, it won't be. Never mind. We got nothing right now. Come see next season.
I'll be sure to put links to your show and to Imposters Theater in the episode notes. But yeah, I have had the privilege of seeing an Imposters show when they were at the Den Theater a few years back, and just the level of work that they're doing is unbelievable. It's so incredibly immersive as well. And yeah, like all of the themes that Mallory was saying earlier about, like, kind of these like whimsical, mysterious, surrealist aspects. It's really, really exciting work to go witness and be a part of. So definitely, if you're in the Chicago area, check them out. It's really wonderful. Well, thank you so, so much, Mallory.
Thank you again. I've loved this. This is great.
Yeah. And we look forward to hearing more from you as Eloise. You don't have to do this, but as a sign off, would you care to give us a patented Eloise cackle?
There.
Thank you again, Mallory Swisher-Kroll, for not only sitting down with me for this interview, but just in general for everything that you do for Eloise. You treat our witch with such care, and it's such a delight to collaborate with you. If you want to check out more of the work that Mallory mentioned, the Imposters Theater Company is in the middle of their 6th season right now, which is just incredible. Coming up at the end of March, they have a musical called Helena and Hermia in the Enamored Odyssey. And then later on in June of this year, they have their 6th edition of Footholds, which are anthology plays written by writers in the community. Each year, they introduce one single prompt, aka a foothold, for writers and collaborators to begin imagining what stories might be told. And this year, the foothold is a lamplit alley fringing the noise before, during, or after the party. So the setting of each play will take place within this alley. Very exciting. So check out more about them at theimposterstheater.com. That's Imposters, IMPOSTORS. And theater spelled theatre.com. Also, as she mentioned, Mallory is a wonderful cast member of Roll for Your Life podcast, so go check them out. Thanks as always to Eli Schneider, the composer of the music you're hearing now. We are so stoked to be releasing our next story very soon. It is coming soon. Do not worry. Keep an ear out for that. Otherwise, dear listener, I hope that you are well. I hope that you are taking care of yourself. I hope that you are finding good community and enjoying storytelling however you partake in that. We will talk to you very soon. Bye.
Strange things have always happened in Spillman. I had higher hope to understand their roots.
If you don't know where this comes from, this is a promise that all things can be explained. Common trust.